talk tonight is called The Only Thing to Fear is the Fear of Fear of Fear of Fear itself. And the title will become clear as the talk unpacks. So this is a series on working with emotions, not just difficult emotions, all emotions, pleasant emotions, unpleasant emotions. Right now we're focusing on some of the tough stuff, but we'll also focus on some of the stuff we like to feel. And so I've kind of done two classes of just techniques and principles for working with emotions, and now we're going to apply all that specifically to different emotions. So tonight's we're kicking off with fear. So the title of the talk is just a play on what Franklin Roosevelt said in his inaugural address in March of 1933 at the height of the Depression, and unemployment is 25%. And he gives a pretty stirring inauguration, just really trying to boost everybody's morale. He's also very blunt in blaming the predicament really on the whole financial system, because natural resources are aplenty, but somehow the way the economy is structured is such that people can't get loans, businesses, small businesses aren't at work, there's a big credit crunch, this and that. And he's very pointed and kind of in this speech blaming it on the business community, which is pretty unusual for a politician. So, part of the speech, he's just trying to kind of like help people feel optimistic. So, in the very start of the speech, he says, "This is preeminently the time to speak the truth, the whole truth, frankly and boldly. Nor need we shrink from honestly facing conditions in our country today. This great nation will endure as it has endured, will revive, and will prosper. So first of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror, which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance." So he's trying to cheer everyone up to come out of paralysis and into action. We can do this, but we can't do this if we're paralyzed by fear. And working with fear, there's clearly a place for that. That fear can really get in our way, right? And so it's very reasonable to think it's important to fear fear. But that's an improvement, we could say, in our relationship with fear. At least we're not sort of just lost in it. We're actually kind of like wary of it. But it's just an intermediate step. If we really want to have a wise relationship with fear, then we see that fear of fear is still fear. And so then that, by that logic, then we need to fear the fear of fear. But that's just more fear. So then we need to fear the fear of fear of fear. And then that's more fear, so we need to fear it all. So you get the idea. Fear, the basic energy of fear is the energy of avoidance. We want to avoid the thing we're afraid of, but then we also want to avoid the fear itself. And, it's interesting, this avoidance is actually most... if you look at the DSM and all the psychological disorders that it names, roughly, this isn't completely true, but roughly they fall into two categories. They're the categories of believing your thoughts too much. So psychosis, things like that, where you believe your thoughts so much to be real that, you know, it goes all the way to psychosis. We're all psychotic. We're all doing that in smaller ways, right? I mean, how many of us in that sit were in some big thought world that we didn't know was a thought world? We thought it was a real world. And then suddenly, boom, we pop out and we realize, oh, phew, I was just thinking. Thank God. Yeah? We're all a little psychotic. The flip side of it, so that's like believing your thoughts too much. The flip side is to try to avoid them altogether. So the first side is sort of being lost in them. The second one is trying anything to avoid them. And that causes a lot of mental stress. So depression is an avoidance strategy. There's something you don't really want to face or feel, so you just kind of shut your whole system down. It is a mood, but it's also an avoidance strategy. How about addiction? That's an avoidance strategy. Anxiety challenges, like OCD, avoidance strategy. Trauma, traumatic responses, also avoidance strategies, where we really want to avoid anything that might remind us of the traumatic memory. So avoidance doesn't work very well. We might have this idea that if we meditate, the rough seas that of my mind are going to somehow calm down, and it's just going to be placid, calm, turquoise water, tangerine sunsets, maybe a little gentle breeze every now and then. Well, that isn't quite the way it works. While we do get more calmness in our system, the waves keep coming. And so a better analogy for our meditation practice is not trying to go to a place where the waves stop coming. That's hard, maybe impossible. It's to actually learn to surf.
Learn to
surf. So we need to be urge surfers. We need to be fear surfers. We need to be shame surfers. Irritation, restlessness, boredom, all of it. If you think that stuff is in the way of your meditation, that makes your meditation a very narrow range of possibility. We need to flip it on its head. We need to see, as the Zen saying goes, the obstacle is the path. Fear, shame, jealousy, irritation, anger, all those things we don't like. We need to wake up and make these our meditation when they're happening. Another Zen quote, this is from Kyung Ho, who was a 19th century Zen master. So an ancient one once said, accept the anxieties and difficulties of this life. Don't expect your practice to be clear of obstacles. Without hindrances, the mind that seeks enlightenment may be burnt out. So an ancient one once said, attain deliverance in disturbances. It's easy, as I've kind of said this, but I'll repeat it for anyone who wasn't here. It's easy to be equanimous when you're watching a roller coaster from a distance, right? You can just watch it go up and down. It's like, oh, interesting. How about being in the roller coaster, in all the ups and downs, and being equanimous? That's the meditative path. It's not about watching it from a distance. It's about attaining deliverance in the disturbances. The waves don't stop, then they don't need to stop if we know how to surf. And that's much freer than trying to somehow you know, calm the ocean. So rather than wishing we didn't have these emotions, instead we need to wake up to them when they happen. And we can do this. We can, you know, if we're fighting against the waves and they're crashing into us, that's hard. If we turn and go with the waves, we can do it. And so we need to just accept that, you know, obstacles are a big part of the path. And real acceptance, we end up having a sense of humor. We have a sense of humor about it, and we also realize we're all in this together. Who in this room isn't, you know, doesn't have their lives with a fair amount of fear in it? We all do. So it's human. We don't like it. That's human. And actually, we can kind of solve the conundrum. That's also human. So humor about fear. Telegram from anxious mother to her college kid, college freshman. Start worrying. Details to follow. Jerry Seinfeld says this about fear. According to most studies, people's number one fear is public speaking. Number two is death. Death is number two? Does that sound right? That means to the average person, if you go to a funeral, you're better off in the casket than doing the eulogy. So we can lighten up, we can have perspective, we can just realize the waves crash. I'm human. Big deal. We all get anxious. We all get scared. Big deal. It means we're human. That's all it means. It doesn't mean anything else. So how do we get to fearlessness, if that is something you're wanting? By willing to be afraid. It's the crux move of working with fear. Fear is this avoidance strategy, and we have this fear of fear. How do we cut that infinite regress of fear, of fear, of fear, of fear, of fear, of fear, of fear? How do we cut it? Not by being reactive to fear. Instead, we have to turn towards it and wake up to it. And in that moment, when we ask ourselves that sacred question, what's it like to be afraid? What's the experience of fear like? That is totally cutting the cycle of fear, of fear, of fear, of fear. Instead of being reactive and just juicing the fear, we're actually in that moment changing our relationship to it. And then we can actually have a relationship with it. We don't even have a relationship with it when we're lost in it. So the crux move is to be willing to be afraid. And that is not the male conditioning, especially. As guys, you know, we're not supposed to cry, we're not supposed to be afraid, we're not supposed to be hurt. Wow, that is a heavy price, right, guys? Heavy price for us to pay. Talk about closing down your openness. So as men, we have the problem maybe of admitting our fear, and I'm just generalizing, so don't put too much stock in this. You know, as women, we might have the experience of sort of like believing the fear too much. You know, the guys kind of want to do the avoidant thing, and, you know, this completely generalizing. Shouldn't even say this because I'll probably just get in trouble. But, you know, the female tendency might be to, yeah, you're fine feeling fear. You know, you allow it. You don't have shame about it because of your gender. But, you know, you might just believe it too much. So.
Are you saying women are more neurotic than men?
No. The male neurosis tends to be more the avoidant side of things, and the female neurosis tends to be more the, like, totally, you know, acted out. And anyway, see, I knew I was just going to stay. Who cares? Either way, yeah, exactly. Thank you. Either way, we're actually not in wise relationship. The avoidance strategy isn't helpful, and the being lost in it isn't helpful. All I'm trying to say is if we don't have shame of it, then there can still be a problem of being lost in it. And let's just take out the gender. So, any other comments or questions at this point? Okay, just pipe up if you need to. So let's talk about mindfulness of fear. We'll do an experiential where we focus on fear and using the RAIN approach. So if you haven't come to previous classes, the RAIN approach is an acronym for Recognize, Accept, Investigate, and Non-Identify. So it's four helpful steps for working with any emotion. So the first step in working with any emotion is to just simply know it's happening. This is huge. If you don't know you're scared, you know, the one I see a lot in myself is if I notice myself being controlling, it's probably because I'm not recognizing that there's anxiety underneath. That there's anxiety underneath. Blah, blah, blah. That's all I was saying.
Well, did you notice? That's what I wrote.
Did you notice?
That's what I wrote.
Look. your hearing's not as bad as you thought.
I was afraid you'd see what I was writing.
So this recognizes a gift to us because we know it's happening. If we don't know it's happening, then we are lost in a thought world and we don't know. We don't know it, right? We all have this experience. You're in a fear state and you're just thinking about all the hypotheticals and you're just, you know, you're really trying to figure it out and you're totally lost in it. You don't know it's happening. And you're in a thought world. You're lost in a thought world. To recognize it is to wake up out of the thought world and realize, oh, fear is happening. It is not some, you know, like absolute truth, you know, within the thought world. That's what we tend to think. We actually realize, oh, thinking is happening. There's thoughts, you know. The real thing isn't happening. I'm imagining the real thing. That's really different from the real thing. So the recognize is huge, and I'll guide you in all this, but in the first step, we label it. We just say to ourselves fear or anxiety or worry or whatever. Okay? So the second step of accept is huge. The first step, we're already cutting the avoidant cycle. And then the second step of accept is cutting the avoidance even more. We recognize it. Now we're really turning towards it. We're really allowing it. Allow fear. So this is what Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, the Tibetan teacher who started Naropa, very well-known teacher of the 1980s, 70s and 80s. He said, fear is not necessarily regarded as problematic. You have to study your fear definitely, how it arises, how it manifests, and how it is actualized. When you begin to understand such fear, then you begin to find that it is almost a big joke. That's the sense of humor piece. You have so much perspective. You can be like, oh yeah, there I go. There goes the fear. It's almost a big joke. But you shouldn't try to cast fear out. Fear should be regarded as the kindling you use to build a big fire of fearlessness. So you have to understand fear as the starting point of fearlessness. You have to make friends with fear. No? Making friends with fear is really important in this accept step of working with our emotions. We have to really be kind. You can't be mindful of something if you're rejecting it. To allow it, you have to be kind. You have to, you know, say, oh, it's okay. It's okay for fear to be here because fear is here. Jack has already popped out of the box, and to try to get rid of your fear is to try to smash him back down in the box. That's arguing with reality. So you need to be kind. Be kind to your fear and say, ah, fear. And the simplest way to summarize up accept is to just say, of course. Of course I'm scared. Can you feel the level of acceptance in that? You're not trying to figure it out. You're not trying to wonder, you know, is anyone noticing I'm scared? You're just saying, of course. No argument. That's like surrendering. With me so far? So the third step is investigate. Not by thinking about it, not by trying to figure out, not by, you know, solving the thing you're afraid of and going into a bunch of thinking about it. That has a place, but we're talking about mindfulness, and mindfulness is never jumping into thinking about something. It's always about being aware. That's what mindfulness is, knowing what's happening. So we want to investigate fear and really learn about fear, like Chogyam Trungpa said, study fear, learn about fear. How do we do that? By recognizing it, accepting it with kindness, and then really seeing what it's like. We investigate, we ask ourselves, what's this fear like? You want to really know what it's like. And I'll, when we do the meditation, I'll explain that a little more. But I just want to kind of unpack. As you investigate fear, you learn things about fear. And you already know this. When we're scared, which time frame are we in? Future, present, or past?
Future.
Yeah. And is the future pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral? Pardon?
It doesn't exist.
Well, it doesn't exist.
Oh, okay.
Is the imagined future pleasant? Are you imagining a pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral future?
Unpleasant.
Yeah. If you're imagining a pleasant future, what's the emotion going to be?
Happiness.
Joy.
Could be joy.
Anticipation.
Excitement. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fear and excitement are very similar. Do you ever have the butterflies when you're excited? It can feel similar in the body, but you're actually in the mind, you're feeling future, you're imagining future pleasantness. With fear, you're imagining future unpleasantness. Already, you have some distance. When you're scared, you're in the future and it's unpleasant.
What about remembering past fears and having that come up? So can you be in the past when you're...
But they won't come up about the past unless somehow you're projecting them into the future. But you can definitely remember past fears. But the brain doesn't usually pick those up unless there's a future thing you're concerned about. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It doesn't feel true to me completely. It feels like
what?
like I've had random fear from old...
Oh, okay.
...stuff come up.
Yes.
And it just seems like it's not necessarily connected or related.
Thank you for... Yeah, well, Yes. So past fear can come up. There can be kind of body experience of fear. You don't even know what the content is. Are you talking about that kind? Mm-hmm. Or, right. So that can happen, yes, where there's just fear, but that doesn't have much content, right? But often, yeah. Often you that level of fear can be triggered by future thinking. Sometimes it just comes up by itself. And if it does, it's not a big problem if there's not much story to it. It's just energy. Now, you can get scared of that energy.
Yeah.
Like, what is this? This is really unfamiliar and uncomfortable. But inside that fear really is future thinking. It's like, where is this going to go?
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But sometimes the future event that's causing the fear is because you remember a past event.
Exactly.
That looks like what you think the future event is.
Exactly. So you're having a memory, and that can evoke fear towards the future.
Yeah.
Right. But generally speaking, there's a future concern somewhere in the fear. And it's unpleasant. So I worked with a client once who never meditated at all, but he had a lot of anxiety stuff. And I just said to him, well, when you're feeling anxious, say to yourself future thinking. And he came back the next week and said, I can't believe how much that helped me. Even though he wasn't a meditator, it demystified the fear. Our thought worlds, we get enchanted and lost in them. But just saying future thinking breaks the spell. You're sitting in a room, right here and now, and your mind is going off into the future. And then as soon as you're aware of that, you realize, well, basically I'm fantasizing. I'm imagining something. It's not the real world, it's a thought world. Like David said, the future doesn't exist. It exists as a thought, but not as a reality. So this is very important to realize with fear. It's future concern, and the future's unpleasant. That's what's happening. Now, we get hooked. In every emotion, there tends to be some kind of simple construct that is the thought that we believe. And if we don't see that thought, it's very hard to be mindful of the emotion. So I went through this some last week. Does anyone remember who was here? What the hook is for fear, the very simple thought that's the basic energy? Okay, it was something terrible is about to happen. It's that simple. Or something bad, maybe terrible is too strong a word. Something bad's about to happen. That's the basic energy of fear. So you can prime yourself, because this week I'm going to encourage you to really take up fear as a mindfulness object. So you want to look for it. And the hook, look for the hook, is my little tag for these thoughts that blind us, that really, they're the ones we believe. So when we're in fear energy, we really believe that. Yeah, something bad's about to happen. As if we're psychic, as if we really know. So that's very important to sort of plant the intention now that when you're on the lookout for fear, you're going to really look for that thought somewhere inside the fear, because that's often the one that's going to catch you. But if you can be mindful of that thought, then you realize it's just a thought. So let me stop with that and invite more input. And
how would you categorize the cringe that comes when remembering something I did that was really, I'll stop at the word stupid.
Yeah. Is it remorse?
Yes.
Or shame?
Yes.
Could be fear. Or if you're afraid you're going to do it again or something, but
no, it's just the memory of that moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how to undo it.
Yeah. Sounds like remorse.
Remorse, yes.
Or guilt or shame. Those are all different.
Remorse and shame, embarrassment.
Embarrassment.
Huge.
Yeah.
I mean, how could I be so stupid?
Yeah.
Mm. I know now how I could be so stupid and why I was so stupid. And I know that it's something that has been mitigated somewhat.
Yes. But we have to get, you know, that's the kind of Monday night quarterbacking when we really pound on ourselves for doing something stupid, right? At the time, we're doing the best with what we got and what we know. If we haven't learned the lesson yet, how can we have not done it? We only learn the lesson afterwards. And so at the time, you know, I mean, this is going to sound weird, but we're all doing our best in the moment as we screw up royally. It's only afterwards that we actually have the perspective. So we wish we hadn't done it as if we should have known better, right? But the fact is we didn't know better. And so we can forgive ourselves. Because it's just the truth. Even if we do something that, you know, we think we should have known better, there's a reason we didn't know better in that moment, you know, for whatever reason.
And yet, the memory of that moment creates a physical.
Yes. So what we want to do, we want to have self-forgiveness. And we can't take it back, right? That's what's painful about when we've caused harm. We want to take it back, but we can't. So then we have to sit with the raw pain of it. We want to avoid that pain. But what's going to really help us learn the most and not do it again is to be willing to feel the pain. And remorse is the feeling we have of being sad that we've caused pain to somebody. Guilt is irrelevant. Guilt is a feeling of something's wrong with me. And it's not about the other person at all. It's about how bad I am, right? So that's a very different energy, remorse and guilt. But if we're willing to just let go and forgive ourselves because we were doing the best we could at that time, and forgive ourselves and be willing to feel the pain of that remorse, we're actually going to be motivated to do better next time.
And we were just saying there, Peter, sort of keys in on another idea as you were talking about this, as you're reflecting on a personal experience, that really tied into a lot of the ideas that you're talking about. But, you know, there's sort of, up to this point, it's sort of like, okay, well, how do we recognize fear? How do we basically come to a place of acceptance with it, allow it to move? But then, I mean, that's sort of like a receiving point. But it seems like to me that there's also this follow-on process that typically occurs, which is this gift, which is like, is the learning, which is the, oh my God, if I hadn't done this, I wouldn't have learned this. Yeah. I wouldn't have deepened a relationship with someone.
Exactly.
I wouldn't have gotten to this new place. Right. And it seems like that, so much time to say, well, I want to, it's just, a way of sort of a strategy of working with fear, almost to the point of it being a negative thing. But in a way, it is that piece. It's like, no, there's a gift in here.
Great.
And it's like that mystery of what is this gift?
Right.
I know we usually don't view it that way, but I was sort of surprised in this experience I had. Well, wow, that is really a powerful thing for me. And it's almost a life change. It was very, somatically challenging and just difficult to sit in it. But it was like, wow, this is really beautiful.
Yes. So exactly, all of these stumbles and mistakes and conflict with people can be real gifts, because we go to someplace deeper in ourselves, and maybe we go into deeper relationship with them, based on the hurt and the mistake and the conflict. So exactly, there can be a gift in all this when you see it. But it doesn't always feel like a gift, right? And so when it doesn't, it doesn't. And when it does, it does. And because you never quite know what's coming, what feels like the world's worst thing that just happened, could be a gift of a totally new direction. You don't necessarily know that in the moment,
What helps me sometimes deal with my fears is to prepare now for doing what I can when I can do something. And when I realize there's nothing I can do about this, those fears then disappear. I still have the fears when I'm not finished preparing, doing everything that I can to deal with it, everything that's possible that I know I can do.
Right.
That helps me.
Yes. So for the mic, just to repeat, the comment is that when I'm just going to really summarize, when I know I've done all I can do, my fears kind of drop away. But when I haven't done that yet, my fears are still with me. Yes, exactly. The Dalai Lama likes to say, if you have a problem and you can do something about it, no problem. If you have a problem and you can't do something about it, no problem. But there is a middle thing where you're not sure yet, can you or can't you do something? So the real trick of letting go is to actually have the anxieties drop as you're trying to figure that out. But that's hard. All right, so we'll take a break. So we're in the investigation of fear, and these are some of the things you learn as you work with fear. So you learn that it's future thinking, you're imagining the unpleasant. You learn that there's this basic energy with something bad's about to happen. And that's very important to become conscious of, because then you can keep being mindful. If you miss that thought, you're going to get caught, and you're going to believe it, and you're going to really think something bad's about to happen. Occasionally, bad things happen when we're scared. It's not to say we want to be completely idiotic, but much of the time our fear thoughts are not really very calibrated to reality. Our fear thoughts, we think we're psychic, but we're not.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't that the irony that what we're afraid of, the fear tends to create what we're afraid of?
Yes. That's the one way where we can get it right with our fear.
Right.
We can.
Works pretty well.
Yes. We can have the self-fulfilling prophecy. If you're really if you're really nervous, like, you know, this is really common, obviously, in athletics, like, oh my God, I'm going to play badly. And it's just like, yeah, you are, because you're, you know, you're not psychic, you're actually causing it. You don't really know the future, you're causing the future. But generally, right? I mean, you know, we all have these experiences. Occasionally, the thing we're really fearing, you know, happens. So this is not to be idiotic. But it's to get it. A lot of the time, the things we are afraid of don't necessarily happen. So when the spiritual teacher Byron Katie was here a few years ago, she was talking about working with torture survivors. And she said to a person, the most common thing she heard was it wasn't the torture that was the worst thing, it was the fear of it. And then there's the Mark Twain quote, "The worst things in my life never happened." We imagine the worst. You know, the worst can happen, but often it just surprises us. We weren't even thinking about it at all. But so the attitude we can have to our thoughts is not one of stupidity, you know, like, oh, that'll never happen. It's more like, we'll see, right? That's kind of a wise, smart way to relate to your fear thoughts. We'll see, you know? Can you picture, you know? That's what a grandparent with a grandchild, we'll see. It's kind, it isn't, you know, patronizing. It's kind, but it's also, you know, not caught in the fear.
It almost seems to me it's nurturing.
Yeah, nurturing. Exactly. We need...
On some level.
The Buddha said that the antidote to fear is love. And we all intuitively know that. Love is the thing that really calms our fear down. So we want to be very kind as we relate to our fear. And, you know, you could say the fastest way from fear to love is to love the fear. Just wake up to fear. That's what we need to do. So rather than trying to get away from fear this week, maybe we can actually look forward to getting scared so that we can actually have it be part of our mindfulness practice. So a couple of other things we learn. When we're scared, our thinking mind is pretty handicapped. And the neuroscience of this shows that in a strong emotion, the amygdala basically co-opts the brain so that we are only in our emotional or mammalian or reptilian brain. We're not in frontal cortex in our primate brain where our thought centers are. So our thoughts are very simple and really compromised. So I call this brain sprain, and it's something that's helpful to say to yourself when you're really scared. Brain sprain. Your thoughts are going to be very simple, very black and white, and they're pretty much going to be fixated on what's scaring you. There's a whole world of possibility out there, but all we can imagine is the worst, right? And our brain is sort of locked onto it. So this is something we learn with fear. Later, when we've come out of the fear, we've actually seen more possibilities. And that's the frontal cortex is back online. You're actually back in sort of whole brain, you know. All of you is now present to assess. But the worst time to assess is when you're really scared.
Mm-hmm. So do we know what's happening to the brain when you're saying during meditation we're facing the fear?
Yeah. Well, the amygdala...
We're still experiencing it.
Yes.
But so what's happening to the brain?
Well, You will all notice this. You can be mindful of fear and still have those sort of compromised thoughts. But what happens over time, if you stay with it, there's calm and equanimity in the brain as well as mindfulness. And that actually unlocks the amygdala over time. But the amygdala can still get locked up in a mindfulness state, but it's not going to last nearly as long. So the trick with any emotion, and I said this last week, is to accept it more and believe it less. This is what we need to do with fear. Accept it more, actually really allow it, and but believe it less. It's the two things we really need to do in any difficult emotion. And that unlocks the amygdala over time. One of the common experiences in fear is rumination. We obsess about something, we ruminate about it. And rumination is the kind of thinking that you just kind of like go over and over and over, and you get no traction. The research shows it paralyzes you. Rumination prevents you from taking action. And we kind of obsessively think about something. We're trying to like figure it out and think through all the odds and ends. And it actually immobilizes us. It's interesting. And, you know, bravery, right, is taking action when you're scared. If you aren't scared, it isn't bravery, right? So bravery is actually acting when you're scared. That's the opposite of rumination. When we're in an anxious or worried place, we're going to think. And instead of taking action, instead of bravery, we're actually just immobilized. So we want to recognize that too. That's just part of what we learn about fear. Now, when our mind calms down with mindfulness, if we can stay with our experience long enough, everything arises, lasts for a while, and passes away. Everything. So fear doesn't last. So what we do with investigation is we stay with it long enough so that the energy of it gets discharged. And we're just staying curious and calm as the energy does its dance. And when that energy kind of releases, then we come back into more calm mind and more creative mind. So the mindfulness really helps with that. It unlocks our brain out of brain sprain. This is another common phenomenon that we do when we're in a difficult place. We're feeling a certain way. We feel embarrassed or ashamed or scared or angry. And then we imagine the future, and we imagine ourselves feeling the same way 8 hours from now, whatever the future thing is we're imagining. 8 hours is a long time to stay stuck in an emotion. And so you can be scared of something, and then you're thinking about that future thing, and you imagine that the feeling you're feeling now is how you're going to feel in 8 hours. That's something to really be on the lookout for. We take our current state, we don't think about reality very well, and we just project it forward as if this is how we're going to feel. So the little slogan I use for that is now is not forever. What we're feeling now, we have no idea what we're going to be feeling in an hour or 5 hours. I mean, do you notice how much your emotions change just in a 30-minute sip? Maybe. We're changeable. So really look for that. Really look for projecting an emotion forward in time. So this is all in the investigate step. These are the kind of things we learn. It's not how to investigate. I'm going to do that shortly. But it's the kind of things you learn about fear. So now the last part of RAIN is non-identifying. This is always the hard one that people don't get at first. Recognize, accept, investigate is our mindfulness practice. And through that, we come up with the insight that, oh, if I know the fear is happening. I am more than the fear. Fear is an experience that is being known. It isn't me. I'm bigger than it. So our typical language is, I'm scared, I'm happy, I'm sad, I'm mad. Right? That's the language of identifying. It's like all of us is mad. Maybe someone can say, when you experience fear, can you name a typical sensation for you and then where in the body that might be?
Racing heart.
Racing heart. And
tightness in your stomach.
Okay, so tightness in the belly. So does fear typically happen in your elbow? Or your big toe? Or your knee? I mean, occasionally, like in real terror, there can be like a full body kind of experience. Generally, what we find in our emotions is they manifest in the body in a certain area. And oftentimes, the thing you're really making a big deal about, when you really look, it might be 5% of you. Like, maybe 5% of your body is experiencing flutter, 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 or tight belly, you know, or racing heart, right? It's not all of you, it's just a part of you. So it doesn't make sense to say, I'm scared. What makes much more sense is to say something like, fear is happening. Or, fear is known. You know, that's actually bringing the mindfulness in. So, this comes as an insight. You can't force it. Don't try to non-identify. Try to be mindful. And then the non-identification is built into the mindfulness. So, when we do all of this, when we're with fear, and I'll say this in our meditation, in the investigate, we ground in the body sensations. We notice the thoughts and images. But we ground our attention in the physical experience of the emotion. When we do that and we don't get lost in the thoughts, the energy tends to move. Right? The word emotion is motion with an E in front of it. This is energy that wants to move if we're not lost in our thoughts about it. When the energy moves, it's going to, you know, maybe increase, plateau, and decrease. And then, lo and behold, something else comes along. And we don't have to do anything but be mindful. And, you know, sometimes when there's really, really deep emotions, you know, it doesn't just burn through quickly. But a lot of times people are surprised that when you really turn towards and allow and get curious, emotions don't stick around nearly as long as you would have thought. So a teacher said to me once on a retreat, something that really stuck with me. I was working with a fair bit of shame, unworthiness in that retreat. And, you know, I'd met with him quite a lot in working with this. And finally he just said to me, you don't have to change it. You just have to outlast it. And that was awesome. It totally struck the chord. All I had to do was keep showing up for the experience. I can't know when the charge of it will get dissipated, but I can know that thousands, millions of meditators over thousands of years have done this practice and have this experience. Emotions dissipate over time with mindfulness. Another quote I really enjoyed from a teacher on a different retreat said this about being mindful of emotions. What we're practicing is non-interference. When we get out of the way, everything self-liberates. Meaning, when we just, all we're doing is being mindful. We'll let the fear just do its thing. Our only job is to know what's happening. And then we have that experience of, you know, beginning, middle, you know, the three-act play, and then end. The drama ends by itself. We see this. we don't have to mess with our emotions. We just need to be curious. Okay? Any input at this point before we do some practice? I guess you want to practice. So let's do it.